yourself a cold one.
They strike him, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time, and we are back after a one-week hiatus in which Fran Duffy presumably had many Daddy Sodas on vacation. Check him out on Twitter at FDuffy3. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. Twitter and Instagram. Facebook is facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. Couple weeks ago, we had our last episode really before we start to move forward. It was an episode that we broke down the 2014 draft. Highly encourage you to listen to that just for the lessons that are gleaned from it. We obviously, before that, broke down every single draft pick by division, by team, in terms of the sleepers and the undrafted gems, et cetera, et cetera. Fran, of course, is the video scouting guru for the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm a former NFL offensive lineman that loves breaking down the videotape, as they say, with my man, Fran. Fran, two things. Before I forget, this is for all the listeners. If you aren't already signed up for DollarShaveClub/Tucker, DollarShaveClub.com/Tucker, what are you doing? Like, if you're not already a member of Dollar Shave Club, I'm flummoxed. I'm perplexed. And if you haven't, give it a try. It's like very little money for an awesome service. They give you this awesome kit, by the way, for $5 if you sign up at dollarshaveclub.com/Tucker. Fran, how was the vacation?
It was outstanding. It was my first extended time away from the office since the season ended. So it was much anticipated and much needed, and it was awesome.
Where'd you go?
We went to Outer Banks. My wife and I went down to North Carolina, made the drive down. A lot of time on the beach. I think between Wednesday and Thursday alone, I think I spent like 17 hours on the beach just those 2 days. So a lot of time, a lot of rest and relaxation to finish up the week. Maybe a few daddy sodas in there as well.
There you go. Yeah, you know what? Get the beach time in for sure before you have kids, because it's different after you have kids. Beach time becomes different. Although, you know, last weekend, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, I was actually at the Jersey Shore, and you actually get our girls are old enough now that it's almost like we're back to being able to relax at our beach time, because they kind of occupy themselves making sandcastles and stuff, you know? So yeah. It is pretty cool. Can you believe, Fran, I must be the only person I know from Pennsylvania or in the East Coast, it's never been to the Outer Banks.
Dude, so I have never been before. I think it was 2 years ago we went for the first time. And, I mean, look, I grew up going to the Jersey Shore. I went to, you know, Wildwood, Sea Isle, Ocean City. Love the Jersey Shore. But as I've branched out, you know, I went down to OCMD for a few years in a row with my wife. And then the last couple of years we've broken down to Outer Banks. I don't know that I'll ever stay in the Jersey Shore ever again for like an extended period of time. Like, I love the Outer Banks so much. It's isolated. It's peaceful. It's, you know, there's kids there, but it's not like too crazy. Everybody's, you know, it's a good time. It's good if you want to go down like just family. It's good there. If you want to go down with a group of friends, there's plenty of that too. So I love it. The two times I've been down there, I've loved it.
Everybody says that. Everybody says it's awesome that's down there. Speaking of awesome, I am very excited for today's guest. You know, we talk so often, Fran, during the draft process, especially about the medical. We don't know the medical for this player or that player. It's a really important part of the process. Then even right before the draft, who were some of the guys last year? They said Leighton Van Der Esch had a messed up neck. I'm trying to think who else really got dinged medically like a couple days before the draft. You think, I mean, there was definitely somebody else. I remember being at the draft and specifically asking another kid about his health. And he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, so there were a few guys, like, even if you just go like position by position, there were so many guys where, you know, say like, all right, well, he's really good, but, you know, like Josh Rosen, like we all worried, oh, you had the shoulder and you had the concussions and you had, you mentioned, you know, with Leighton Vander Esch, with his neck. I mean, there were Maurice Hurst, you know, he obviously, he had to deal with the heart stuff. Harold Landry, he fell presumably because of a medical issue that none of us knew about. You know, Billy Price had the shoulder, and that was very out in the open because it happened on TV at the combine. So, you know, look, there's always issues that, of guys, and it's a matter of what do we know in the public, and how much of that A is real, and how much of that maybe is also hidden too. And that's the stuff that we don't really find out about. Some of those guys, it's a hidden issue, and they still go early. And then sometimes it's a hidden issue, and they go in the fifth round, like Tyrell Crosby. You know, and I both watched, and we thought Tyrell Crosby from Oregon was a top 40, top 50 type talent. And he goes, what, was he the fifth round with the Detroit Lions? Like, those things happen. So I think the fact that we're getting the guests that we're getting today to talk about this is going to be really interesting and really enlightening.
Yep, Dr. David Chow, long time team doctor for the San Diego Chargers. They're obviously in L.A. now, but we just wanted to get some more insight. And we're going to have great guests on the next few weeks to talk more about the process that goes in to what ends up happening in the draft. So without further ado, let's talk to Dr. David Chow. So Dr. Chow, let's just get right into it. Now, Fran and I go about the process every year of talking about the college prospects leading up to the draft. We talk about them year round. And of course, you know, the couple months and weeks, especially leading up to the draft, seems like we end up talking more and more about the medical and the unknown there. So we wanted to just get educated, us a little bit and the listeners a lot of bit, as to the process that goes in to the medical grades that team doctors like yourself, long time with the Chargers, end up giving college prospects. So I guess the first question I would have is, how does the process start? Because you guys, by the time you show up to the combine, you already know like what the issues are that the kids have had, right? So how does it start? They give you like files, or you do prep ahead of time so you know where to tug and where to pull?
Well, as you know, there, Ross, that all the doctors in the NFL have day jobs. Their primary jobs are not with the team. Their primary jobs are at their private practice or university, like myself, throughout time. So before getting to the combines, there's a fair amount of work being done, but quite honestly, not really done by the doctors. The athletic trainers are gathering some data, and certainly the scouts. And for every player at the combine, the scouts will have reported on what they know about medically. And the combine also has a process where they ask the school what injuries the kids have dealt with. Now, there is a little bit of a HIPAA issue where the kid needs to sign off to allow this to happen in terms of privacy. So there is some advanced knowledge. And then when you get to the combines, the first night that you're there, there is an athletic trainer that asks all sorts of screening questions so that hopefully you can get all the right testing done before being seen by the doctor. So there is some prep work, but for the docs, not really before you get to the combine.
So, doctors, you just take us through that combine in terms of the daily grind it is for you guys. Everybody talks about, oh, it's a grind for the players, and obviously it is. But from your perspective, what is that like? And just give us, I know you can't give us all the secret sauce to that process, but just what that's like for you guys in terms of what the players all shuttling in and what that was like on a daily basis out in Indianapolis.
Well, I've been to Indianapolis, I think, close to 20 times for the combine. And then, of course, there's recheck combine. So at one point, I thought about getting a condo in Indy. Literally, I've been there a lot of times, 50-plus times between games and then combines and recheck combines. But we affectionately called combines, the doctors, or at least I called it, Groundhog Day. It was the same thing over and over again, year after year, day after day. It was originally a three-day process. It's become a four-day process, and the players are divided out by position and into different workout groups. And so for four straight days, you're examining a total of about 330 people. So the bottom line is you certainly are concentrating on the person in front of you, but at the end of the day, I have to refer to the list and notes to be able to know what we really found. Because if you think about it, if you're doing 70, 80 guys a day, do you really remember everybody that came through? I mean, that gets to be a pretty daunting task. And, you know, if the average is two MRIs per people, you've reviewed 160 MRIs and 80 people in a day. So it's done with in teamwork with your athletic trainers and the other doctors. I'm not the only doctor there. And it's broken down into six rooms where there's either five or six teams in a room that work together in a certain way. So each athlete has to go to all six orthopedic rooms as wow. well as the one medical room to get cleared.
Yeah, you know, I remember, I think I might have told you this story before, Dr. Child, but I remember I didn't go to the combine, but my college teammate, Dennis Norman, did. And he said that there was so much tugging and pulling that they kept pulling on his shoulder and saying, does that hurt? Does that hurt? And he had never had issues with his shoulder. He said by the end of the day or the end of the time, they had pulled on his shoulder so much that when they pulled and said, does that hurt? He said he was thinking to himself, yeah, you know what? That kind of does hurt now. That you know, that it was that significant.
Yeah, you know, I get it. I mean, if I were on the other side of the equation, I mean, potentially, if you have a shoulder issue, remember, all 32 teams get access to you. And each team is there usually with several team physicians, at least in the orthopedic room. So potentially 32 times three, I mean, you could get your shoulder tugged on up to 100 times. That is, now, that's the outside possibility. But, you know, even getting your shoulder tugged on 30 sometimes is probably a fair amount. Now, the tests that we do in theory are not violent, but I get it. I mean, repetitive it could be and exhausting it could be. But it's really exhausting on both sides. I mean, you know, the player's getting tugged on his shoulder, let's say, 30 some times, but the doctor is tugging on, you know, 80 shoulders in a day times two, right? Right and left, and kind of deal. So it works both ways.
So, Dr. Chow, I guess the biggest question I have, honestly, for you is, and this is probably a very general question. There are probably a million different ways you can answer it. But what are the injuries, I guess, that worry you the most, that set off the biggest red flags as far as future predictors for, I guess, future injuries? Like, you know, do excessive knee injuries bother you? Or is it a back? Is it foot for bigger players? Like, are there certain things that kind of stand out to you as the biggest red flags for prospects as they make the transition from college to the NFL?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things. And, you know, I'm not a scout, but, you know, how scouts rely on certain metrics or certain visual things or, you know, certain GMs like players with certain, you know, arm span for left tackle or whatever it is. Medically, we have our quirks, too. I will say not every team doctor is exactly the same. It is subjective, no different than one GM says this player is the first pick of the draft and another GM says another player is the first pick of the draft. So there are some subjective differences. But in answer to your question, it depended on the position and quite honestly, in some ways, the type of player. I mean, I'll give some examples. One of the things... for people in Ross Tucker's position on the offensive line, I did not like posterior shoulder instability. The reason why is posterior is less common than anterior, but when it happens, the surgery is harder and the recovery is longer. The chance of it being on both sides is higher, and sometimes you can have enough posterior laxity that it can end your career. On your shoulder. And obviously, Ross, you can speak to this, that, you know, to be able to keep the defensive lineman off of you in arm's distance and to be able to punch and withhold, you know, with your arms extended, that puts a lot of stress on your posterior shoulder. So that's an example of one position where I didn't love a certain injury. And of course, there are other positions where, you know, obviously on a throw, on a quarterback, you know, you want to fine tooth comb his shoulder, everything in his shoulder, but that's obvious. But, you know, it really depends on the type of position. You know, on an offensive lineman with some early arthritis in his knee, you might be a little less critical because they're not working in space versus a DB who makes a living out in space if there's some articular cartilage damage in the knee. So it really depends on the individual situation.
So I want to go and continue on that, Dr. Chow, in terms of the combine process. So you go there and you make notes. So you make notes on every kid there. How do those notes then become a grade? And what is the grade? Like, what are the grades that are then given? Like, are you on the flight back being like, all right, you read your notes and say, I'll give this guy a B+, or I'll give this guy a 3. I think it's like, it's a 1 through 5 number thing, right?
It depends on the team, and there are different grading systems. Depends on the team and depends on the general manager. Throughout my 17 years, we had several different grading systems. And quite honestly, I spoke with the GM to try and modify it to make it more meaningful. Yes, there's a common grading system of 1 through 5, 1 being the best, and essentially only kickers got 1s, you know, with no history. And then other teams use an ABCDF, you know, classic grade school grading system. I was partial to doing, if you're doing ABCDF, pluses and minuses. And, you know, when I came into the league, they had a system of 1 through 5, you're correct. And quite honestly, nobody cared if you were a 1 or a 2, and you very rarely cared if you were a 3. You only cared, the GMs only cared if it was a 4 or a 5 or something like that. And so I wanted to change the grading system to push all the 1s and 2s together, because you didn't care about that delineation anyways. You wanted more fine point delineation, and I instituted a system, and you're going to laugh, but called a 3+L, and you're going to say, what is that? Well, you know, 3 is you pass, but you've got a lot of stuff, and to be simple, and 4 is you pass, but you know, there's major red flags, and 5 is you can't play football. So honestly, there aren't a lot of 5s out there that can never play football. There are some 5s that, you know, given time, let's say you're coming off an ACL, in 6 months from now, you're going to be okay. So I modified that to a 5 to a 3 so that they could see long-term what that might be. And I sort of coined the term 3+L, meaning, look, he's really pretty close to a 4, and you don't count on this left tackle the last 10 years. L is for longevity, to call attention to it. And depending on the GM, sometimes they'd say, look, this guy's that talented, I don't care if it's a 3+L. And sometimes they'd say, no, I've got someone about that rates about the same, and I'll take the healthier guy. So the medical scores, to me, were always relative. It was one component. It's kind of like saying, this is the guy's 40 time. And if you tell me he's got game speed and you want to draft him, okay, this is his medical grade. But, you know, if you really think that he's worth the risk or and that head and shoulders above the talent of somebody else, that's why the GMs make the big dollars.
Dr. Chow, what was it like in the room when you're working with, you said it was up to, you know, maybe 6 different teams in a room, 7 different teams in a room. Obviously, you have personal relationships with the other doctors and other trainers that are around the league, but was it a little bit of like a cat and mouse where you're kind of, you may notice something and, you know, maybe you notice, hey, you know, I don't know if this guy noticed it or this guy noticed it, but my team may have an edge because I noticed something that the other doctors noticed? Or was it more of like a collective grade, I guess, from each player that came through your specific room?
Well, you know, my last name is Chow, spelled C-H-A-O, but I like to call the combine rooms organized chaos in the sense that there was a lot going on. And usually in our room, there were fellows or junior doctors doing the thorough screening in the back tables and then presenting in the center of the room to the head team doctors. And then the head team doctors, like myself, would be able to jump in at any time with this organized presentation with questions, look at MRIs or the exams. In general, compared to what I believe GMs and scouts do, there is tremendous amount of cooperation. However, I don't know that the cooperation is complete. I mean, if I found something, in general, I didn't go and announce it to the room because it was just my opinion. But if a colleague asked me, I usually would share. And, you know, you'd have relationships with people where then you might ask them for confirmation on a player, and they would share with you. And it's very typical for each team to share grades with a couple of other teams, that there are internal arrangements just for confirmation, and that does happen. Now, but I did get a list of 50 or 60 players, which I call them the red dotted players, that the GM or the scouts would single out as, take really close look at these 50 to 60 guys. These are the guys we're super interested in. And that list, of course, we kept quite confidential.
So I guess my question now is, you go to the combine, you make your notes, then you make your grade. Do you actually talk to the GM and the coaches about your grade? Or is it you just make the grade, you just give them the 3+ or the B- or whatever, or the 4, whatever you give them, and then it's over and you're done with? Or is there like lengthy sit-down meetings where you're going over your notes, going over your grades?
Every team does it a little bit differently based on the GM's preference, and it also has evolved a little bit over time. In the beginning, we used to not get our MRIs till afterwards, and so as Fran alluded to, I would be on the plane ride home, and for the next week I'd have a binder's worth of homework to go over the MRIs and what have you. Now there is and then you make your final grade or adjust your preliminary grades before you turn them in. Nowadays, the attempt is to get the MRIs all ahead of time before the doctor sees you, so you can have them all right there looking at the MRI and correlating with an examination, giving you better accuracy instead of off of memory. But then you'd make your grade, and then depending on the team, either the head athletic trainer or the head athletic trainer in the head team position would sit in some of the draft meetings where they would talk about the grades and so forth to elucidate what you really meant by certain grades. And there were times that GMs would obviously like a guy and say, "You sure you want to give him that grade?" And I'd say, "Well, I'm just reporting what I saw. You know, it's not like I'm telling you not to draft the guy. I'm just giving you the relative risk."
So then I guess I want to get to like the fact that every year, a couple days before the draft, stuff comes out. I remember this year specifically, stuff came out about Leighton Vander Esch, the linebacker from Boise State, and his neck. I can't remember. There was somebody else that, you know, you hadn't heard anything. Maybe it was Darius Geis. I know he had the off-the-field stuff, but it might have been medical too, that just like a couple days before the draft. What was your general sense of when that news came out for certain players or whatever came out? Like Leighton Vander Esch legitimately told me he had no idea what I was talking about. Yet, you know, that was like a published report multiple places that he's got something wrong with his neck.
Well, when I was in the NFL, I never paid attention to any reports, so I never really looked at it. But now in the last 3-4 years, as I've done all this media stuff, I've paid a lot of attention to it. First of all, you know, I deal in insider knowledge, not insider information. I try and analyze what's out there publicly. If I come across something from another doctor, and they do sometimes ask me questions around the league, I never report any of that. I look at it this way. Insider information can get you in trouble with the SEC, but insider knowledge can hopefully make you a lot of money in the stock market. So I deal in insider knowledge. When there are doctors that have said something to me, then I don't turn around and report it. And I'm not a reporter. I'm an analyst. And I think it's a little bit unfair to have leaks of information. whether it's from scouts or coaches or, God forbid, from medical staff or doctors, it's unfair to the players. I don't know where these leaks come from. And I think the NFL and probably the NFLPA has done a better job. This year, I noticed a significant decrease in the number of leaks of information that were out there. And, you know, and then talking to some of my doctor friends casually, you know, I'd say something like, oh, this is a healthier year at the combine. They'd say, no, not really at all. There's a lot of people. But, you know, I didn't ask for names and I didn't report them, kind of situation. But you have to understand that no matter what happens or what someone says about Leighton's neck or what I said about Jalen Smith's leg and nerve, I mean, I struggled with this. This is a side story. But I got accused of costing Jalen Smith millions of dollars because I commented on one of Jalen Smith's tweets. When Jalen Smith got hurt at Notre Dame, I said, well, that's a pretty bad multi-ligament knee injury. The worry is the nerve. And continued on that. And he posted a video, I think, 3 days before the combines of himself walking through the training room without a knee brace on. And he said something like, 7 weeks after surgery, and I don't have my knee brace anymore. And, you know, lauding his progress. But if you look closely at the video, he had an AFO ankle foot orthosis on, indicating he indeed had a peroneal nerve palsy. And so I commented on that. And some other reporters said basically I cost him millions of dollars. And I kind of chuckled at that. First of all, I only commented on that because he put out the video, so I thought it was fair game. Secondly, in 3 days, every team doctor was going to see it. You weren't going to fool any team doctor when they examined his leg that he didn't have a peroneal nerve issue. So perhaps I let the cat out of the bag 3 days earlier, but I certainly didn't cost him any money or any draft position. And as a team physician, I can tell you I never read or listened to the reports. Let's say something leaked out on Leighton Van Der Esch. I would rely on my eyes, my exam, and my MRI or CT scan and x-rays. So sometimes, you know, people think these media reports are out there and they cause players to drop. I don't really buy that because, at least for me, it never changed any of my grades.
I just curious, last question, I guess, is do you have any examples of guys during your career where you thought, man, this guy, this is really bad, and he ended up playing forever, like a Frank Gore, maybe someone like that? Or conversely, where, you know, you really thought somebody would be totally fine and it turned out to really bite him in the butt? Or conversely, you know, you were totally right on someone and really helped the team.
Well, you know, of course, I never missed on any of my draft medical evaluations, right, Ross? No, I'm just kidding. You know, I mean, you can never you can't make every block, you can't make every tackle, and all you can do is give your best effort. And quite honestly, things change. And quite honestly, sometimes you look at somebody, you know, you say it's a 60-40 that he'll be okay. Now, does the coin come up on the 60 or the 40 side? You know, it's hard to say. But I will give my and I have permission to talk about this from the players, but my funniest little combine story and draft story in terms of medical. Look, our information was always utilized, and our GMs used to be very thankful that we used to get stuff. One of our guys told me once that his compatriots around the league said, how do you get so lucky drafting all these injury guys? And he said, well, it's not luck. We look at them and we say, this injury is going to make it, this one's not, kind of thing. But during the draft, at my time in the draft, most years, I was in the main draft room at what I would call the kids' table. There'd be 8-10 people, the GM, the owner, the head coach, you know, the main guys at the main table, and I would be at a little round table in the corner with the head athletic trainer and I. So it was an exclusive room, but I was at the kids' table there, you know, and all the draft boards and the magnets are up there. And this year, I forget the year, but it was the year Antonio Cromartie was drafted, and he wasn't even a, quote, red-dotted player where we were paying attention to. But because he was coming off the ACL, I think he dropped, and he was a top-10 talent. And as we got closer, the GM would come up to me, AJ Smith, and say, you know, what do you got on Cromartie? And we'd tell him, and, you know, and the pick would get two picks closer. And he'd say, what else you got on Cromartie? And so I'd sort of reiterate the same thing. And I remember him coming over a third time, and I was like, give him the same thing. And then I remember turning to the athletic trainer. I said, unless there's reappearing ink on this piece of paper, there's nothing else I can give him, because, you know, I don't remember Cromartie independently. It's all off of these notes. And we end up drafting him in the mid late first round in good career. And then with our first pick in the second round, Marcus McNeil had a bad back. And once again, we told him, look, the Cromartie, we told him, will be fine. He's not fine today. He just needs a few more months of rehab. Marcus McNeil said he's got a back issue. He needs some rehab, but, you know, it's not surgical and he should be fine. And so when we drafted him in the second round, we were ecstatic because they were thinking they were going to try and get Marcus McNeil in the first round, and he dropped to the second, and we got Cromartie. And the draft room was pretty happy, and our GM came over to me and said, and the athletic trainer, and said, well, men, it's all on you now, because, you know, these were two medical issues. And I said to him, I understand if either of these guys don't work out, I'm going to be fired. But if they do work out, do I get a raise? And he pretty much just chuckled and moved on.
That sounds like A.J. Smith. Although I blame you, didn't Cromartie then?
I love A.J. Smith. I thought he was, you know, did a very good job, and I very much respected him.
No, I know. I'm just busting your chops. But didn't Cromartie end up later on having like a torn labrum in his hip? That was you, Doc. You missed that.
I don't know that I have permission to talk about anything there, but the bottom line is as you know, Ross, the public didn't know about all the injuries that you played through either. And so,
no, I know. I'm just teasing. And I think that was like year four or five of his career or something. So it's not like when he was coming out of college, you could look through his bones and see that 4 years later he would tear the labrum in his hip. I'm just messing with you. But this was awesome, man. This was really, really – I love the Cromartie three-time story, and it's all on you now, Doc. Like, thanks, A.J. Smith. That's funny. But I can see him saying that, and I know he's messing around, but that's awesome. Dr. Chow, really appreciate the time. Highly encourage everybody to follow him on Twitter. It's at ProFootballDoc. I follow him. He is excellent. Again, at Pro Football Doc, Dr. David Chow. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you, Ross.
That was awesome. I knew it would be the exact information we wanted to get, Fran. I mean, we still won't know what it is for the kids when they come out every year, but at least we have a better idea of the team's process when they have the information and how it can impact their status, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that it's always going to be a specific case-by-case basis with all of these players and all of their, you know, issues, whether they're off the field or just the medical. But just getting a little bit of enlightenment there, I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that was fantastic. How about next week, by the way? Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network, Move the Sticks on Twitter. He's going to join us next week, which should be awesome. Really, really looking forward to that. Anytime you get a chance to talk to him, I've already seen some of his notes on next year's draft class. They're calling it the year of the D-line. So we can ask him about that, as well as, you know, his process after scouting for three different organizations, including, Fran, your Philadelphia Eagles. Speaking of which, you can always catch Fran on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast every week. He talks about the game of football from the All-22. You like knowledge, you like to learn, that is where it's at. He's at FDuffy3 on Twitter. I am at Ross Tucker NFL, Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. Make sure you are subscribing to the show so you don't miss Daniel Jeremiah next week, as well as we love when you rate and review it. There aren't a lot of draft shows or college draft evaluation shows that are year-round. We do it for you guys, but we need you to return the favor with the retweets and the likes. Other than that, the keg is kicked, and we are all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft. Chug. Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.